Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
We're back. Hour number three. Just flying along this morning, Kevin Walsh.
We are moving along. I was just watching about 19 different angles of Tony Kroos's goal from yesterday. What a freaking
amazing
goal.
We should have talked about that. I should have talked about that at the Open. That was amazing. I mean, Twitter was on fire with saying Germany's a mess. They're going to get bounced, and it's going to send shockwaves through the sport. The defending champions have not done well in the World Cup or the last five editions, many of them not advancing past the group stage. And Germany was at risk, down 1-0 to Sweden at halftime. They scored an equalizer right out of the gate in the second half. We may have even been on air at that point. I can't remember. But right out of the gate. And no, we weren't. We were gone. I fell asleep during that match. I actually got a nap in yesterday, which was glorious. But it was amazing. Like, when you have little kids, like, naps just become a part of your life in a way that I hated taking naps for the first 40 years of my life. And then I had kids, and now I need them in order to survive the days. So they get the equalizer. And then they hit the post. I think it was about the 90th minute. They hit the post for the win. A couple minutes later, set piece, time running out, the final minute of stoppage time on a free kick. Kroos just hits an absolute. It's going to be a historic goal, especially if they go on to do things in this tournament. It'll be remembered as the goal that saved their World Cup. So now they have 3 points, and they'll be in a position to get through along with Mexico in that because Mexico's up, has two wins now, so they have 6 points. So in any event, Kroos's goal was amazing. Just a bender around, over the wall, past the goalie. It's kind of an unsavable shot, really. Just a tremendous finish, and the place went crazy, and the official basically blew the whistle right after that. Time was running out as he did it. So anyway, on to the NFL. I was right. Gene Steratore was the fourth referee to retire this offseason. It's amazing that they have to replace that many guys. But Ed Hockley, Jeff Triplett, and Terry McCauley, that was the other one that decided to retire. So maybe fans will be happy about it. I guarantee the fans will be complaining even more and be like, look at these inexperienced refs making all these mistakes. So that's what's going to happen. Anyway, so I'm getting through with this draft. I updated you a little bit yesterday. It's a slow draft, so I haven't really, added many people since then. I've only added two players since then, but one of them was Deontay Foreman. Basically, all the starting running backs are gone, so you start to look at pieces in drafts like this, best ball type drafts. Scott Fishbowl is a little bit more of a best ball roto type setup than is your standard league, regardless of the scoring. So Deontay Foreman, I think he's got a shot. Lamar Miller didn't exactly impress in his first season in Houston last year, and I think Foreman just has an opportunity to pick up carries along the way. Plus, you just at some point in drafts like this, you have to start doing the what ifs. What if this guy gets hurt? Who sees the carries? And Deontay Foreman would be in a good position to pick up a lot of the lion's share of the carries in Houston if anything were to happen to Lamar Miller.
Yeah, I do think Lamar Miller's kind of always been one of the more interesting guys since he showed up in Houston these past two seasons. A lot of people really, really excited for year one. I was myself. And it just didn't really pan out for him. And then last year, everyone was so low on him. I remember taking him in. I was over in one of the GST leagues. I remember I had picked him, and I was right next to Adam Ronis, and he kind of looked at me and goes, yuck. And I was like, oh, boy, that doesn't make me feel great about that. And then I looked over because they have two drafts going on at the same time. And he was picked like almost two full rounds later than when I had selected him in the other league that was drafting. I was like, okay, this is super unfortunate. And then I remember kind of just about like every other Houston Texan, when Deshaun Watson was on fire, he was kind of given some pretty good production. And outside of that, it was poor. I do think the big thing that stands out for him is the 3.7 yards per carry. So if Foreman gets himself right, I mean, he could be in a position to just steal the job outright.
Yeah, and he had 4.2 yards per carry. He only caught six passes on the year, Foreman did. He only played in 10 games. He's banged up as well. But Lamar Miller, to his credit, 16 games last year, played in all of them. He started 13. He touched the ball over 270 times and picked up 1,250 yards of offense, basically. A little less, over 1,200 yards of offense. Let's just say it like that. And six total touchdowns. So as disappointing as it might have been for some people, the 1,200 total yards and six touchdowns, you do get some value out of that. Now, to your point, it was many more valleys than peaks. But over time, you're going to need players like that. Yes, Lamar Miller isn't going to wow people over the course of a season. He probably won't, but having a guy with 1,200 total yards and six touchdowns is a huge positive, considering that I drafted David Johnson and Dalvin Cook on a team. Think of that.
Mm.
Think how that went for me. It went sideways in a hurry.
Yeah.
So you just have to consider that. Some guys that are available, but what, you know, it's an old NFL cliche, but the best ability is availability. So even for your fantasy teams, and I know he may not have carried you to victory in any one particular game, but I think people overstate how bad he's been at times.
Yeah, I think so. It kind of in that time span with Watson, he had a pair of games where he was able to get over 70 yards rushing. Without Watson, he wasn't able to get to that mark. With Watson, he was able to get over 40 yards receiving twice. Without him, wasn't able to get over that mark. He only had two total touchdowns without Watson, one rushing and one receiving. So it kind of, again, it goes in line with just about all of these Texans outside of DeAndre Hopkins. Without Watson, they were useless. And with Watson, they were pretty impactful. And again, that's, Hopkins does not qualify. Hopkins hasn't been doing this with trash QB after trash QB. So I do think that Lamar Miller has value. He's kind of someone that I've come across in those best balls. And, you know, the way they're ranked on that draft app is by their ADP. So sometimes if you don't scroll down far enough, maybe you'll miss someone. And he's one of those guys where you see some of the riskier plays, sometimes even like pass-catching backs go before a Lamar Miller, who's kind of still locked into that number one role. And it just shows how low the community as a whole typically is on Lamar Miller. I kind of would agree, though. I think he maybe gets a little too much slack than what he is warranted. Or
he's top 20 the last two seasons. He's top 20 the last two seasons. Mm-hmm. He ranked in the top 11 in touches and top 14 in scrimmage yards both seasons, although he was running behind Alfred Blue down the stretch last season. So, you know, again, decent production. He's not going to wow you, but he ended up being the top 16 back in PPR leagues last year, although well off the pace of some of the top backs, notably Gurley, Bell, and Kamara, Hunt, Gordon. You know, like, he's well off of that pace. But in any event, he's an RB2. I think you have him slotted in right around there last year, but he probably, I'll bet for most people, I'm going to check it right down on Fantasy Pros, I would imagine that he drops. I bet you he's right at the end of the RB2 discussion on Fantasy Pros, because experts really don't like him because of his lack of efficiency while he's in Houston. He was known for his efficiency in Miami, but his drop since he got to Houston. So let me see where he's ranked right now. Yep, that's right. Right at the end of it, I figured. 24. So there you go. Behind Mark Ingram, who's not playing for a month, and Rashad Penny and Darius Geis, who are rookies, and Jay Ajayi, who's got chronic knee issues, and Joe Mixon and Kenyon Drake. And Kenyon Drake, I think, is the guy that could just absolutely bury teams this year, because as much as I think he's got an opportunity this year, I see people drafting him really high, and that worries me. Same with Jerick McKinnon. Those two guys just kind of concerned.
Ooh, you're out on Jerick McKinnon. McCoy,
I'm not out on him. That's overstating it. But for him to be the 14th running back off the board, high RB2, I think is reasonable. But I think there is other evidence to suggest that they're going to share the ball a little bit. And for him to be a workhorse kind of back is miscasting him.
Would you McKinnon or McCaffrey?
I'm going to go Christian McCaffrey. It's got to be PPR. They're right next to each other in these rankings, 14 and 15. But I'd take McCaffrey over McKinnon, personally.
It's got a lot more to do with Kyle Shanahan than pretty much anybody else involved. Also, we were kind of having a McCaffrey discussion where it does feel like there's a lot more of their options kind of returning, or a lot more guys that are going to be in the fray in Carolina next year. So I think I would.
Yeah, CJ Anderson, and people are concerned about that kind of stuff. I don't know. People are talking. Christian McCaffrey's got a little bit of a fire lit under him. He's disappointed in his rookie season. Other people disappointed by it. I felt like all in all, you got some good production.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought so too. And running the ball, they didn't do a good job. But that's a team thing. I didn't think that was a Christian McCaffrey thing.
Well, I also don't think that's really what he is though. And I think that the people, I mean, there were. I remember, you know, I mean, it's those talk sports debate shows that kind of just say things for, you know, reaction or whatnot. But I remember when McCaffrey posted like one of the worst bench press numbers at the combine, everyone was like, this doesn't matter because a football only weighs X number of pounds. That's kind of what was said. And I was like, it's so stupid. Like that's not how this works. Like he's not a guy that's going to break a lot of tackles. And that's just not how he's best used. They spoke about it. He was a round. If he was just a wide receiver, he could have gone in the second round, third round, the latest.
Yeah,
that's the type of skill set that he brought to the table. And when you look at the production that he gave you in that area, it was really, really good.
Yeah, I agree. So we'll continue. I think his running numbers will be better this year. So I think he has a better sophomore campaign than he did a rookie campaign. That's just how I'm looking at it. McKinnon. I think Breida and Joe Williams could take some of those carries from him. I do like the fact that Kyle Juszczyk is in front of him, because that should clear ways. Mike McGlinchey apparently has been good throughout training camp, and they added him at right tackle. They still have Joe Staley there. They traded for Laken Tomlinson, obviously, and they just signed him to an extension. They got Weston Richburg from New York, so they've rebuilt this offensive line. As much as Joe Staley is a mainstay there.
Yeah.
They've rebuilt it a little bit around them. So everybody likes what the Niners are doing, almost to the point that I feel like I need to back off the Niners.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? No. It all makes sense. I like what they're doing too. I like the Shanahan Garoppolo combo. Marquise Goodwin was better than people thought last year. Pierre Garçon coming back, although it's from a neck injury and that worries me. They added Dante Pettis, who's going to be an explosive return guy. McGlinchey at right tackle. I always like when teams, I've said this to you many times before, I never criticize teams that go after offensive linemen in the first round or multiple times in the draft, because I think it's always a position of need. They add McKinnon. They got a fullback. And it kind of all makes sense. And I'm like, what can go wrong? You know what I mean? And Seattle's gotten worse, right? The Rams have gotten better. Seattle's gotten worse. But what can go wrong? Everybody's going to be on the bandwagon. Is it just right in front of me and I should say, you know what, the Niners are going to be really good? Or am I going away from the public and saying, you know, it's too much all at once? It's like in a way, I've been off of the Bears because I think the Bears added too much all at once. And it's hard for me to expect it to work, but it worked in LA last year offensively. Goff was there, you know, but he hadn't played as much as a rookie. And they added Watkins and Kupp and Woods all in the same time, and it worked. So maybe the same thing happens in San Francisco. So we'll see. But other guy added in that draft, I'll put a bow on this draft for now, is Marquise Lee, who stayed in Jacksonville while Allen Robinson didn't. And I know that raised an eyebrow for some people. Allen Robinson was going to get paid big money coming off of an ACL injury, and Marquise Lee will still be there. He is going to be the leading pass catcher on that team. And I know it's not a team that's going to throw the ball a lot at all. They'll probably be bottom five for sure in so far as pass attempts, but I'll take Marquise Lee. It's a first down league and a half point PPR. That's a 12th round pick. He's my fourth or fifth wide receiver. I think I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, I don't hate that at all. I mean, you got to think about the situation there is it's an interesting one. They need somebody to catch the football, so why not him?
Yeah. So you know, I don't know where I'm going to look at him in other drafts. This one is unique because, like I said, it's a first down league, and I think he's going to be a guy that can move the chains for them in addition to the Leonard Fournette usage that you'll see. I also thought about T.J. Yeldon in that spot, too, because when we talk about what I talked about earlier with Deontay Foreman, T.J. Yeldon is another guy. Like, when things happen to Fournette, Yeldon can be looking at a guy that picks up a lot of touches. So we'll talk a little bit more about that, and you're going to fire some of your best ball questions at me after this. It's Mike and Kevin, hour number three on FST.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Back on FST, Mike Blute and Kevin Walsh taking you to the top of the hour, at which point you'll have Fantasy Football Frenzy. That's Corey Parson and George Kurtz. Great show. Listen to those guys. And then it's the Fantasy Baseball app. No, that's not the name of it. It is the Tout Wars Baseball Hour, and that is with Lorne Michaels, Justin Mason, and that is from 2 to 4. Producers, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I got that one right. Let's say I had a boy, Sean Engel, coming through and telling me I'm doing a good job. So going back to the numbers I was talking about earlier, the Jaguars attempted the 21st most passes in the league last year, 527. They ran the ball the most times, so they just had a lot of offensive plays in general. They had plays. Yeah, let me see. Important to note. Obviously, their defense is limiting other teams. So the Jaguars had the most plays, offensive plays, in the National Football League last year. That might not be something that people thought, but because the defense was limiting other teams, it lent the offense to having the most plays. So they ran the ball the most times, and they threw it the 21st most times. Well, who would you guess threw the ball the most times in the NFL last year, Kev? Surprising.
The Ravens? I'm going way out on a limb.
Let's see where they are. They were 11th, so not there. It was actually the Giants. Because they were trailing so much.
That's so terrible. They were so bad last year.
They threw the ball 608 times. The Niners were second at 607. The Bucks, Dolphins, man. Arizona Cardinals. You know, usually you have to think of teams that are trailing in games. Giants, obviously, with a 3-13 record, were trailing quite a bit.
So bad last year.
So there you go. One other piece of news that I think is important. Titans right tackle Jack Conklin suffered a torn ACL in the playoff loss to the Patriots, and it remains unclear whether he'll be good to go for the start of the season. It's too early to say whether he's going to open the regular season on September 9th. That would represent a recovery time of less than 8 months. So even though he's an offensive lineman, that is really quick. He hasn't missed a game yet in his two-year NFL career, and he attended OTAs and minicamp, but hasn't done more than walk around watching. So it may be a while. So keep that in mind for those Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis backers, and even Marcus Mariota to an extent. Titans has been an offensive line that has really built themselves up well the last couple of years, and Conklin is a key piece there. He's kind of a nasty, good run block, great run blocker. And I would guess he wouldn't be on the season, but these offensive linemen surprise me more than anybody when it comes to guys coming back. The offensive linemen just have that – they have the ultimate football mentality. Like, they just play hurt, and they just get out there, and they don't want to let the other guys down. It's just that kind of attitude. We've seen it many times. And so there's something to keep in mind for their offensive line. Let me see if there's other big news stories.
Keep in mind while you look up for some other news stories there. Their other tackle, Taylor Lewan, is currently one of those guys in the group of players that we're talking about holding out as well, looking for a new contract. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
I don't think that he doesn't seem like a situation that's going to end up extending into the season. But I mean, look, if week one they're without their starting left tackle and right tackle, that gets so dangerous because Marcus Mariota is an injury-prone quarterback, and you do not want to subject him to unnecessary hits because, you know, I mean, the right tackle, that's a completely different situation, but you don't want to pay the left tackle. That becomes incredibly interesting now to keep your eye on, and maybe part of the reason why Taylor Lewan felt that he had a little more leverage in sitting out.
Where would you guess of all the left tackles that Taylor Lewan ends up, average money per year? Where do you think he slots in?
I would assume it's got to be. I mean, he's been fantastic. So because it's new money, he'd likely land top five. No, is that? I don't. That
he
is,
would be. Now, right now, he's 25th average money per year. So that's why he's looking for the new deal. He's still in that rookie deal. So that's why. Nate Solder's the highest paid. The Giants made him the highest paid left tackle in the league. Russell Okung right behind that for the Chargers. Trent Williams, Teron Armstead, Tyron Smith, David Bakhtiari, Eric Fisher, Cordy Glenn, Riley Reif, Andrew Whitworth. So that's your top 10. But that's why Lewan is looking for that kind of money. Makes sense. He's been extremely productive. They're going to have to pay them. Look, the Aaron Donald, Odell Beckham, Taylor Lewan crew are going to get paid. It's just what we talked about yesterday. The teams are trying to sort it out. The Rams are capped out. I actually was thinking of something last night. When they signed Ndamukong Suh, everybody's like, the Rams are going for it. I also think it's an insurance policy in case Aaron Donald isn't here.
Well, he was one of the few people that, when I say one of the few, because I'm not positive, he's the only one I can even remember. Cam Chancellor did it as well, not last year. Who was willing to take the holdout into the year. Now, the situations were vastly different. Cam Chancellor's my all-time favorite holdout, where they were terrible. They're like, just please come back. He came back, and then he punched the ball out of Calvin Johnson's arms on the way to score the touchdown. Then I think it was Bobby Wagner who tipped it out. The refs, being as terrible as they usually are, didn't call what was obviously then. Should have given the ball to the Lions on the one-yard line. Doesn't matter. Cam Chancellor pretty much came back after missing games because of his absence, and then immediate impact was like, oh, that's probably Defensive Player of the Year. He didn't win it, but that was fantastic. But Aaron Donald, I remember he missed. I know he missed the first game. Might have missed the first two of last season. So that's actually a great point. I hadn't even thought about the idea that Sue could be there in case Donald isn't there for the first 3 weeks or something.
Yeah, I think that's going to end up being the messiest one.
But you know, that's so unfortunate because he is, and I don't know if you would disagree, but I mean, he's the best defensive player in football. So
yes,
I mean, it's just, it does show how difficult.
He missed two games last year.
The NFL and their players are just so screwed relative to the rest of their athletic peers when I just look at kind of baseball and especially basketball. And again, it is different. It's 53-man rosters compared to 12-man rosters in the NBA. It is not to say that they should get so much. It's that people are lining up 12-01 July 1st to give Luol Deng 4 years, $18 million every single year, and he's not playable months into that contract. And Aaron Donald
is one of Chandler Parsons.
Aaron Donald is one of the five best football players in this league. And the Rams have to play this game because they're going to see how much do we have.
Yeah. So I would say on Aaron Donald, but to clarify, he missed two games, but he only held out for one. He came back and played in their second game. So there you go. There's a couple of highlighted stories for now. The NFL also declined to give Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, who became a doctor this offseason. They declined to give him the opportunity to put the MD at the end of his jersey.
I think that sucks on the NFL's part.
I think it sucks, too. I think it's lame. I understand them having to have uniform complicity across the league, but there's plenty of other guys that have added senior and junior and three and all that kind of stuff. I mean, do they think there's going to be a rash of MBAs in the NFL?
They don't want to set the precedent.
They want to set the precedent for all these doctors and MBAs and guys that are getting their Series 7 license to post that on the back of their name. So I think it's silly.
I don't want to go into like some deep rant, but it is unreal how even the smallest freaking things this league can't get. The smallest things this league cannot get right. And they still blow everything out of the water. It's unreal.
They put junior and senior and three on it, and they have a doctor. They have an active medical doctor in play, which is a great thing to promote of all the things that they've managed to get wrong from a PR perspective, and he's out. So maybe he appeals it. Maybe he gets an opportunity. Maybe they feel the heat from fans that are saying, this is really ridiculous. We'd like to see this guy do it. You know, it's like the John Urschel thing. You know, he was a mathematician, and he decided to bow out because citing that, you know, he wanted to do other things with his life. I think he was concerned about his health long term. They did what they could to promote that, but probably not enough. Anyway, you wanted to talk about something specific, which we should tackle in this segment here before you start asking some best ball questions. The opening odds, this is via Oddshark, the opening odds to be the first NFL head coach to be fired. This is courtesy of Betway. Hugh Jackson, +350. Adam Gase, +750. Marvin Lewis, +1,000. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they should have just parted ways this offseason, and they were won over by a couple of games that he won at the end of the year. And they locked him into a 2-year deal. So I think Marvin is there. The Bengals are notoriously frugal, and they don't pay people to not work. It's not something that they do.
Mike, you want to know who's going to get fired?
Yes.
The Rock and Riley's manager. I just looked up and noticed that they didn't switch from FS1 to Fox. They've got the drag fuel racing on two of their TVs. And they've got, I think it's Joel Olstein, the preacher, on the middle TV, preaching right now, no World Cup. He's going to be fired. What are his odds? I'm putting down significant money. Unacceptable.
Right. Well, you should talk to him after the show.
I will not.
But feel free to visit. Feel free to visit Rock and Riley's.
Absolutely,
any
great
week
place
that you'd like.
Great place.
Madison, located across the street from Madison Square Garden, right in Midtown Manhattan. Please feel free to visit. Don't knock, tap on the glass while we're broadcasting. Thank you very much. So, getting back to the odds, Marvin Lewis +1,000, Vance Joseph +1,000. That's an interesting one. Dirk Cutter +1,200, Jay Gruden +1,200, Todd Bowles +1,600, Bill O'Brien +2,000, Jason Garrett +2,500, John Harbaugh +2,800, John Gruden +2,800. That's insane. He just got there.
Yeah.
Pete Carroll +2,800. I know where my money is.
Ooh. I would say I would. I'd like to find out what are the odds that I can put on John Gruden not being fired, because they get, what did they give him, like a 10-year deal or whatever it is? Like, they're going to Vegas next year.
Silly.
John Gruden is going absolutely. I would say another thing that pops out to me is I wonder if the Dirk Cutter odds would shift at all with this Jameis. He is kind
stole
of
stole my thunder.
Okay, then.
That's why I'm jumping on Dirk Cutter right now. So, yeah, I do think it hurts him. I think you have to have an understanding, coach and GM. Now, the coach and GM are tied at the hip. So it would be tough for the GM to let the coach go because he's kind of firing himself. But there has to be an understanding that we don't have a starting quarterback for our first three games. Additionally, though, they didn't have Jameis for three games last year, and Fitzpatrick went 2-1. So there's at least a precedent for them not having him and being relatively successful. So I would say Cutter. I think things are just going to go sideways for this franchise under him. I just think that they're not going to get to the playoffs again. They've been in last place five of the last six seasons. I don't know that they can climb out of that again this year. We've talked how strong that division is with Atlanta, New Orleans, and Carolina to some extent. And I just think they're probably in last place again in this division. So I'm not saying he's getting fired in week four, but I could see that being a problem. The other guys that I look on are real hot seats for the season are Vance Joseph and Adam Gase. Hugh Jackson, I don't think he should be there, but I think they're going to give him the year to play it out. Now, if it goes really bad and they're like, you know, 1-12, then yeah, I think John Dorsey's going to be like, you made me keep him. I didn't really want to. I think we need to move on to develop this team and get Baker right and bring in a guy that I know is on my short list. And by the way, that short list is probably post-it noted on his computer screen right now, the 3 to 5 guys that he wants. And it's an old adage in the NFL that you always have to have your short list. If you're a GM, there's a list in your drawer of the guys that you're going to call as soon as you need to make a move at coach. And John Dorsey's got that list together, I guarantee that. So, but the in-season guys, Cutter, 1, Gase, 2, Joseph, 3. Because it would be early to do it with Joseph. He's only been there a year.
Can I then allow me to throw a name out there that I do actually find quite interesting? Because, again, this is the first coach to be fired, right? I think Jason Garrett would be a really good play here. I think that there is a very good chance that they finish last. I do think that's something you would definitely look into if you are going to seriously bet down bigger money on this. Look into the strength of schedule for the beginning of the season, right? Like, this is all moot if the Cowboys are playing a bunch of cupcakes the first 3 weeks, right? They perhaps could get off to a 3-0 start. But I definitely could see Jason Garrett being fired. It's not. I don't think that Jerry Jones or the Cowboys fan base has ever been
in
enamored.
The season, though?
Yeah.
One of these guys will get fired in season.
100%. And, I mean, Jason Garrett giving
you
plus.
It's a good long odds play. I see what you're saying. But they'd have to be really bad for Jerry to admit that he screwed this up.
Well, but see, my thing is, you have to, I would say that Jerry doesn't think that he screws it up. Like, Jerry would look at it as Jason Garrett's fault. And that's why Jason Garrett is being fired. Because Jerry would say, we're putting out a better team than the product that which we are receiving. And that's why he needs to go. So I do think that I could see Jerry making that type of move. Their season opens at Carolina, home versus the Giants, at Seattle, and then it's home versus the Lions, at the Texans, home versus the Jags. I mean, there's not any necessarily there's no game that really jumps out as a as some type of walkover game. If they started the year 1-5, wouldn't shock me. And if in week 6 or week 7, rather, going into it, they opted to move on from Jason Garrett, I wouldn't be surprised, because it seems like every year we're talking about Garrett being moved on from. So yeah. I think he would be a good play in this situation. I also think that he could be good. Like, I think I would be more likely, even if their odds were the same, to put money down on Garrett and Hugh Jackson for what you said. I don't think he was going to be fired this year. He went 0-16
this
year.
I don't think so either. Yeah, he should have been let go after going 1-31. He wasn't. The GM was, you know, basically told to keep him, And I think he'll be around for the year, unless it went really, really bad, like I said. And I don't expect that. A lot of people are saying, look out for the Browns. I'm not quite there, but I don't think they're going to be miserable. I think they've added a lot of talent this offseason. That's the bottom line. The Adam Gase thing, I don't think Adam Gase is going to be around for the Miami rebuild at all. So that's why I have him high on the list. I just think Cutter is in front of him for me. But this could be just because Miami doesn't have enough talent right now for him to turn it around. And I don't think they're going to give him the opportunity three seasons in to make that turnaround. It'll be somebody else's job to do it. Mike and Kevin back to close out the show right after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
I would just love to let this song play out. Amazing. Love this stuff. Good job by Rob Bowe and Sean Engel today producing our Foo Fighters Sunday. We'll start doing themed bands or musical themes. I've never really done that. I request a song here or there, but I kind of like this idea. I give credit to Rob for getting it started as he departs the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Nice working with him. He's moving on to, better things. He's a recent college graduate, and he's moving on. Rob, congratulations, bud. Yeah, there you go. Nice little golf clap. So one more thing before we get into some questions. If you enjoy playing daily fantasy sports but are sick of dealing with professionals using algorithms to select hundreds of lineups and entries, try the Props Builder tool at mybookie.ag. Forget having to create multiple lineups. Ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches and avoid experts winning 90% of the money. Just invest in the players that you want without salary caps, and if you sign up for a new account using the promo code FNTSY, you can elect an option to receive a 50% deposit bonus with a rollover requirement. No more dealing with late lineup scratches, no experts to compete against, just you and the prop that you choose. Go to mybookie.ag, enter promo code FNTSY upon sign up, and choose your matchups using the Props Builder tool. That's mybookie.ag. Promo code FNTSY. So thanks for joining us this morning. Kev's going to hit me up with some questions here in a moment. And I'd also say that please keep listening because Corey Parson and George Kurtz are coming up real soon to give you the lowdown on this football season. Break. I don't know sure exactly what it is they're talking about, but they're going to be two hours of fantasy football frenzy, and that's Laura Michaels and Justin Mason after that. Doing the Tout Wars Baseball Hour. So, Kev, questions for me. What do you got?
So I want to start kind of with the Packers running back situation. I recently saw a report, I don't even remember where I had seen it, they're talking about that they think that Ty Montgomery maybe has a decent year. Currently, the way the ADPs work on the draft app, I'm curious of how they currently are ranked on Fantasy Pros. It goes Jamal Williams, then Aaron Jones, then Ty Montgomery. Not a ton of space in between the three of them. I guess you could say there's a decent amount in between where Jamal Williams would be and where Ty Montgomery is. But I've started to add some Ty Montgomery and some more of the recent best ball drafts that I've been doing. But kind of as we get closer to when we're doing real drafts and when we start getting in the training camp and things like that, do you anticipate one of these guys pulling away? Because I still do like Ty Montgomery. I mean, he did well in that running back role. I know it's not his natural position, but he did do well in it.
Yeah, so good question. I do think that I'm going to look at where it is on Fantasy Pros right now. I was looking at one list, but it's not the one that I wanted. So give me a second. I'll get into it. Aaron Jones at 42, Ty Montgomery at 45, Jamal Williams at 40. So I think that's indicative of how – that's obviously indicative of how experts take a look at it. I'm right in line with it. If I were ranking running backs, I would probably put Aaron Jones first, Jamal Williams, or Ty Montgomery second. I'm not really sure. It's that close. The upside of Ty Montgomery is that, you know, he can catch a bunch of passes, and he'll do that. But I think the downside is that this is a committee. So if you want me to predict one guy to take the job and run with it, I'm just going to say Aaron Jones. But I don't really know right now. I don't think anybody knows. That's why you have all three Green Bay running backs outside of the top 36. So all of these guys are bench running backs, flex options for you. So I don't mind you adding Ty Montgomery, but he's got to be a flex role. And if he's one of your two starting running backs, it's way too high, obviously. If he's your third running back, it's probably still a little too high, but it's not egregiously so.
And I think the question, though, could be, as we get into training camp, is does it look like a committee on the outside and the Packers are hoping for one guy to take hold of that job? Or is there a plan to use all three in various ways? I would be somewhat surprised if Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones were splitting carries. Like, I feel like Montgomery, part of the reason why I liked adding him is I feel as if he likely has a role regardless within this offense. So that's kind of why I liked that, for at least, especially talking in a best ball, where there's a level of production I feel like at least I'll get out of Montgomery with some nice upside.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. You try to avoid these committees as best you can. But look, when you're talking about your fourth, fifth, third, fourth, fifth, sixth running back, you're going to get involved in some of these things, whether you like it or not. So I get it. You just like Montgomery a little bit more. His ability, his versatility is more so that of somebody like Aaron Jones or Jamal Williams, who may not have the ability to do everything that they want to do, right? Mm-hmm. So I keep looking at on the Packers is Randall Cobb with Jordy Nelson having moved on. Randall Cobb is going pretty late, and I know he has some limitations, but with Jordy Nelson having moved on, Devontae Adams is the one. I think Randall Cobb could be in line for actually a better season than we've seen recently. So that's the one guy, and obviously the Jimmy Graham thing is a new addition too. So not really, you know, just something to consider. Randall Cobb is a guy that I'm looking at on the Packers.
Yeah, I like that. I wanted to ask you about some of these quarterbacks. I know you do believe in wait on quarterback, but I mean, at the end of the day, people still got to draft them, right? And if there's value there in some of the top guys, then you might want to look into them. So the way these guys kind of are shifted, the top four are Rodgers, Watson, Wilson, and Brady, and I think that for someone like yourself, you're not all too interested in getting involved in those guys, and those are likely the top four, and people know who they'll want to get. But the next crop of guys that I feel like could all be somewhat grouped together are Cam Newton, Carson Wentz, Drew Brees, Jimmy Garoppolo, and Kirk Cousins. And I think that they're all interesting for different reasons, right? Like, Wentz is coming off the injury. I think that his mobility does play a lot into how successful he can be, so there's question marks there. Cam Newton is going to get Greg Olsen back. Now DJ Moore is involved. As every single year, they say they're going to use him less as a runner, but that never seems to be true. So we could start with those two guys. For Newton and Wentz, would you feel strongly one way? Because I've kind of been, when it comes down to it, if I'm picking between the two, I've just kind of been splitting up the two guys.
I think it's fair to split them up. It's close enough. I'm worried about injured players coming back. You have to be.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson being the fourth ranked quarterback, that's a lot of confidence from fantasy football experts for a guy that has had two ACL injuries in his career, is going to come back off of a injury shortened rookie season and come back out and be the fourth best quarterback in fantasy football. That's extremely high expectations. I know what we saw was really good last year. It was great. But that is extremely high expectations. And I'm seeing some experts have him ranked as the number one QB. That's insane to me. Of course I'm worried about his injuries and Carson Wentz's injuries. I'm not the first one that's going to jump on the Cam Newton bandwagon, but He's not hurt. He's been relatively healthy throughout his career. Cam Newton's always going to be a better football player than a fantasy football player, right? But he has the ability to tack on touchdowns because they're not going anywhere anytime soon with him running the ball. They keep saying, we want to get it out of Cam's hands, and they add pieces that seemingly want them to do that. And then the whistle blows, and it all goes out the window because Cam kind of wants to physically take over the game. I get it. I'll take Cam over Carson Wentz.
I think that that's totally fair. You look at the next three guys that I
just
mentioned.
Because I don't know what Wentz is going to look like. I don't know.
I absolutely agree. I mean, that's part of the reason when I was asking you yesterday, it was just about having to fill that void of one guy for that kind of bye week. And I was looking at Foles, and he was immediately off because I don't expect him to be the quarterback of week 8. But he's someone that I've put on a roster before. Like, I've had Wentz, and I'm like, you know what? Let me just pair him. Let me just be safe, and I'll pair him, and I'll see what happens. I mean, it's also not out of the question that Foles ends up somewhere else as a starter if there's a big injury. But we don't have to get into that. And the next three guys.
Yeah, I mean, and look, yeah. And just to add to that, you can add, if you're in a best ball format, you can add mm-hmm. Foles. But if you're in a standard, like a redraft league, and you just got your 12 teams, you just really need one QB.
Yeah. For sure.
Don't worry about backup QBs. I often roll without a backup QB. I get prepped in time for my bye week when it's coming up. I'll just look for the best matchup for that particular bye week. My starting quarterback gets hurt. I have to scramble, make a deal, look for somebody else on the waiver wire. My exception to that rule is if you're in a league where if you know your participants all grab backup quarterbacks, then you just might have to tyranny of the majority. You may have to also draft a second quarterback just to make sure that the waiver wire isn't ultra thin if your guy were to get hurt or come bye weeks.
So now you have Breeze, Garoppolo, and Cousins. Breeze last year was very difficult, I think, on fantasy owners. His 23 touchdowns were his fewest during his time in New Orleans. However, his 8 interceptions.
I had Drew Brees last year.
Anyone who owns Drew Brees knows. His 8 interceptions were his fewest. His completion percentage was the highest of any quarterback ever in a single season. His yards were the lowest that it's ever been at any point in New Orleans. And his attempts were also their second lowest. The only time that he threw fewer, he played one less game. So for Drew Brees, I don't want to say down year because it didn't look like he kind of lost it, but he was asked to do different things. Sure.
Yeah, I think that's true, and let me interject. He led the league in completions. He broke the all-time record of completion percentage, and he led the league in yards per attempt. Those are all good metrics. Mm-hmm. He led the league in net yards per attempt. So he was extremely efficient when they obviously got away from the historic way in which they moved the ball down the field. Clearly, the explosive play of Alvin Kamara was the biggest difference on the team, and he had many long touchdowns, which probably took a few touchdowns out of the back pocket of Drew Brees, but I don't think anybody was complaining as they were rolling to an 11-5 record. They won another divisional title. They really should have beaten, obviously, Minnesota in the divisional round, but if your question is, do I think the numbers stayed down around where they were last year, I think they'll probably be pretty close. I could maybe expect an uptick in touchdowns because 37, I believe, to 23 was the drop off. But I think it creeps back up closer to 30, maybe 5 more touchdowns than you saw last year. But I think they like the way they played an efficient brand of ball last year. They were fourth in the league in average drive time, set top 10 in yards per drive, points per top 3 in yards per drive, points per drive. So those are team-wide metrics that are measuring the efficiency of your offense, right? The fact that he had a really good touchdown interception ratio is a positive as well, 23-8, even though it's not the historic. I mean, it's a guy that can throw 50 touchdowns in a year. Can. So I think it's fair to say that the numbers stay closer to last year than they did to 2016 when he had 5,200 yards and 37 touchdowns.
And a big question perhaps could be in the games without Mark Ingram is, do they feel like they need to throw the football a bit more? So that is also something that can kind of help the overall numbers a bit. And then you've got Garoppolo and
Cousins. But if you're asking me to bet the over on, say, Drew Brees 25 and a half touchdowns on the year, I'm taking the over.
Yeah, I would too. I wouldn't feel comfortable. I mean, the years before the 23, he threw 37, 32, 33, 39, 43, 46, 33, 34, 34, 28, 26. The 28 and the 26 were his first 2 years in New Orleans. So, last time that he had thrown that less touchdowns than that was he threw 11 touchdowns in 11 games played in 2003 when he was on the Chargers. So,
yeah, it was the least touchdowns he had thrown. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's the third least touchdowns he had ever thrown in the season. It was the least touchdowns he had thrown since he had been in New Orleans. Last time he threw his few touchdowns is 24, or last time he threw less than 25 touchdowns was when he was in San Diego in 05. So, yeah, it's a change, but I think he was comfortable with it. I don't think you didn't hear Drew Brees complaining or doing anything like that. You know, he was out there as efficient as ever.
I agree. I mean, it's going to be. I think though, fantasy wise, it is tough to gauge, right? Because we're talking real quarterback rankings. Everyone still keeps Drew Brees within their top five, but fantasy, I don't think I would feel as confident in keeping him in that range. I just can't.
Right now, Fantasy Pros has him as seventh. Kirk Cousins at eighth. He's right behind Carson Wentz, right in front of Kirk Cousins. So it goes Cam Newton at five, Wentz, Brees, Cousins, Stafford, Roethlisberger, Garoppolo, Rivers. I'll tell you to wait all day. But, you know, if guys like Drew Brees and Kirk Cousins are dropping precipitously and I'm in the ninth round and it's like, should I take Isaiah Crowell or Drew Brees? just take the freaking quarterback at that point. That was happening to me last year. In some of these drafts, you get into these experts drafts and it's like a game of chicken. Like, oh, I'm not taking a quarterback. I'm not either. I tell everybody to wait. I'm going to wait. It's like, all right, guys, I'm not taking Marlon Mack over Drew Brees because he's not even a starter right now. So so that's why I ended up with Drew Brees in a lot of situations. It was a little disappointing, but he was still consistently good every week.
No, he gave you a baseline. Then would you think you'd be more inclined to take the consistency of a Drew Brees? Or do you think you take the risk, I guess, with Carson Wentz not being certain what you would get coming off the injury?
I'm more likely to take Drew Brees, to be honest. When I'm drafting, I'm going risk averse. So most of my drafts will be at a time where we have a little bit of a better picture of what Wentz is going to look like. But true. Right now, I'm taking Brees over Wentz.
While I think that is fair, Carson Wentz last year would have won MVP had he
was awesome.
Had he been able to just play the last 2 weeks. So
he was awesome.
It's going to be
there's no denying it. I have to have some more information on what he's going to look like and we'll find out through July and into August whether or not that's the case.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think the quarterback group is it's always tough to sift through, and that's probably part of the reason you wait on it as well, because it really hurts to miss on a quarterback if you picked one of the first five.
Yeah. You know what? Overall, they're kind of bunched together pretty tight. But we'll talk more about this next week. I'm off next Saturday. I'll talk to you next Sunday. Kevin will be here with George Kurtz on Saturday. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your Sunday, and we'll talk to you next week.